Listening to Retro Migration, the tune Show Pod from the Boarding Card EP. Before this, Jaden Thompson with Only One. Also Joe Silva in there with Can't Hold Back. And Maya Jane Coles before that with Survival Mode. That's something new by her. We started off the set with DJ Seinfeld and Walking With Your Smile from his release Mirrors. That's it for this show for me. I'm DJ Firefly. You've been listening to Couch Dancing on WRCT Pittsburgh. Feel free to check out my website at djfirefly.com.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country this spring. More than just a walk, Moving Day is a fun and exciting fundraising experience that unites the community in the fight against Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's doesn't stop, and neither will we. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register for an event in your area at movingdaywalk.org. That's movingdaywalk.org.
KIX Morning News Update. Mark's promise to rewrite rock history was prematurely and tragically interrupted last night when an overwhelming power surge totally destroyed Carnegie Hall and blacked out the entire city. Survivors describe the destruction as evil, spooky, and wow, bad karma, man. Our cameras are on the...
There. This is MC Honky. And you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
I want to start today with the Haitian immigration crisis. This is potentially one of the first major Joe Biden tests that is sort of going aimlessly and contributing to Joe Biden's declining approval rating. We talked about Joe Biden needs a big accomplishment to stem the decline in his approval rating. The situation with Haitian immigrants does not seem to be helping. So we're going to go through it. And I think, you know, there's this unfortunate thing where every time I say, hey, guys, is Biden dropping the ball here? People angrily email me and they say, David, have you become some kind of right wing Trumpist or whatever? Presidents mishandle things. And it doesn't mean that I would prefer Donald Trump to be president of the United States. Just sometimes presidents don't immediately or at all handle situations correctly. And I think this is one of those situations where, due to its complexity and due to conflicting messaging from the current administration, it is hurting Joe Biden. And we can talk about to what degree that's fair. So let's start with some of the latest news here. Reuters reporting, angry scenes at Haiti airport add to Biden pressure over expulsions. And we'll talk about what that means in a second. Angry scenes broke out at Haiti's main airport on Tuesday among migrants sent home from a squalid Texas border camp as U.S. President Joe Biden faced mounting pressure to stop an expulsions policy the U.N. refugee chief said may be illegal. Nearly 10,000 migrants, mainly Haitian, remain in worsening conditions in the impromptu camp that sprung up under a bridge spanning the, as it's called in the U.S., the Rio Grande. From the Texas town Del Rio to Mexico's Ciudad Acuña. In recent days, U.S. authorities have removed at least 4,000 people from the site for processing in detention centers. Some 523 Haitians have been deported to their homeland on 4 flights, with repatriation set to continue on a regular basis, according to DHS. Returnees reacted angrily as they stepped off flights at Port-au-Prince Airport after spending thousands of dollars on arduous voyages from the troubled Caribbean nation via South America, hoping for a better life in the United States. On Tuesday, they found themselves back where they started. A group of men in white T-shirts rushed back toward the plane after they disembarked, with one man attempting to get back on board, witnesses said. The migrants broke into a restricted area of the airport as they attempted to recover passports and personal belongings. Ground staff closed the door of the plane before the man could scale the steps back in. Tempers ran high, exacerbated by the news the Haitian government had accepted the deportations. So there's an OK article in Politico outlining the potentially problematic future of this for Joe Biden. Now, before we look at the article, I think it's important to mention part of the problem here is that this is a very complicated situation. And you simultaneously have Jen Psaki saying the treatment of the migrants is unacceptable. And you have deportations, but they're saying, well, the people being deported are basically just the men, but the women and children are staying, and conservatives are angry either way. So I'm not pretending that there is objectively a correct solution here that would absolve Joe Biden of any drag on his approval. But we can still acknowledge that this is causing a problem for Joe Biden. The Politico article says Biden slips into political quicksand amid Haitian migrant buildup. The article is by Natasha Karecki and Laura Baron Lopez. And the article says the mass of thousands of Haitians at the U.S. southern border has put the Biden administration in the exact place it's tried to avoid, knee deep in immigration politics. I think that's completely accurate. In the past 24 hours, the White House has responded to images and videos of aggressive tactics used by Border Patrol to corral migrants by supporting an internal investigation into the matter. What it hasn't done yet is figure out a solution to the crowding and sanitary issues arising in what's become a makeshift encampment, or stop its policy of deporting migrants upon arrival. That's left the president and his team with few supporters and allies. And we can talk about what should be done while also recognizing that in terms of Biden taking heat, there's almost really nothing he could do, right? You criticize the treatment of the migrants by Border Patrol, and the right says, oh, look, you're on the side of the illegals rather than of law enforcement. And then you do deportations and the left says, well, but if we're acknowledging that these people aren't being treated correctly, then you just send them out back to the situation that is a disaster in their country. Now that's also bad, and that's inhumane. And you don't improve the situation at the encampment, and that's inhumane. But if you do improve it, then the right says you're coddling criminals, as they like to say. So I get that no matter what, there would be criticism, and yet we can still talk about what is the correct path forward, which we will do. The article in Politico goes on to say, a coalition of more than 38 civil rights and immigrant advocacy leaders sent the White House a letter calling on Biden to stop expulsion, some of whom arrived to the border community after fleeing violence and natural disaster in their home country. The letter marks a final straw, said Nana Gyamfi, executive director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, described the moment as an inflection point for Biden's commitment to a humane immigration policy. Members of the president's own party, including Chuck Schumer, echoed the call to end expulsions. Increasingly, they did so while directing their ire at the White House for its handling of the situation. 12 House Dems will hold a press conference calling on Biden to halt deportations. So what is it that should be done here? It's not totally clear, but it's causing a problem for Joe Biden, whose approval rating has now hit a new low of 43% as of yesterday. Kamala Harris down to 49%. This is the lowest approval rating that Joe Biden has had. And this does not yet fully account for what's going on at the border with the Haitian migrants. This poll ended on September 17th, and it has Joe Biden down to a presidency low of 43%. Now, it is typical that presidents see approval decline throughout their presidency, as we've talked about before. Many people, just as soon as the president does one thing they don't like, they say, I no longer approve. And it's often difficult to change that. We've seen that with many presidents. At the same time, there is a question here about whether Joe Biden drops into the 30s. And my expectation, my prediction was, as we saw the approval ratings start to go down around the Afghanistan situation, which I agree with leaving Afghanistan as just as a reminder, if you've not seen those segments, my thought was it'll get down into the low 40s before it might turn around and start going up. I don't think the situation in Del Rio is going to help. So what should happen? You know, it seems as though a sort of balanced approach here would be provide better conditions and sanitation, figure out a way to do it. The right will say you're being soft. But remember, the right's been saying that since January 22nd. Before Joe Biden changed anything about what was being done at the border, the right was already saying Joe Biden is being soft. So either way, they're going to say that materially improve the sanitation situation at the border, must do. There's food shortages, etc. Do some kind of a temporary pause on the expulsions. Now, the right will say these people are here illegally, so of course you're going to deport them. And at a certain point, this is going to have to be adjudicated in a more serious way. But the problem is, if you don't put a pause here, you don't even allow the opportunity to say, is there a valid case for asylum here? Now, many of us would say, obviously there is. Look at the situation in Haiti. It's a legal question. But if you just immediately do the expulsions, you don't even allow the opportunity to do that. You're not going to please the right. That's the reality. But at this point, nobody's happy with how this is being handled. And I think the major criticism is, it seems aimless, where it's not really clear what is even the goal down there. And so we will see if I think by Monday there has to be some clear messaging, and we may even get it today from Jen Psaki, who's going to be, by the time you listen or watch today, the press briefing will likely already have been held. Now, I want to talk about kind of the sideshow. There's always, with every real story, and the situation in Del Rio, Texas, with the Haitian migrants is a very real story. Joe Biden is not putting forth a sort of coherent package of what it is that should happen, and that needs to be done. But there's always a sideshow. And the sideshow here is Fox News reporter Peter Doocy with a bizarre gotcha attempt with Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, yesterday, focusing on, has Joe Biden been to the border in his life? That's the question. This is just so pathetic. And the problem with this is that it generates the idea that these are sort of like valid questions and the right way to hold the administration accountable. This is just gutter trash. Okay, let's take a look at the video.
One more. Has President Biden ever been to the southern border?
In his life?
Yes.
I will have to get look back in my history books and check the times he's been to the southern border.
We have been looking all morning, and we cannot find any record of him visiting the border as president, vice president, senator, or even as a concerned citizen. Why would that be?
I can check and see when the last time or when he may have been. But tell me more about why you're asking.
Because this is a president who makes a point when there are disasters in this country, like a wildfire or a hurricane, to go and see for himself firsthand what the needs are of the local community so that he can have an informed POV to make policy. Why doesn't he do that? Why doesn't he go down to Del Rio, Texas and see what's going on?
Well, first of all, Peter, I think the situation at the border is the result of a broken system. And the president certainly relies on his experience. So whether it was the work he did to address root causes as vice president, his efforts when he was in the Senate to support comprehensive immigration reform, steps that at a time were done, being done and worked toward in a bipartisan way, something that certainly we think should be the case today.
So, you know, the answer from Jen Psaki is okay, but there are real questions here, as we discussed in the last segment. You're opposed to the treatment of the migrants, but at the same time, you're not really improving the sanitation and food situation. But at the same time, these are, at least for now, people who are here illegally. But at the same time, even though you want to be more humane, you're, you know, expelling people without any real analysis of the situation. And it's not really clear what solution you're proposing. And Biden's approval is declining. There's a real situation here that could develop into a very significant drag for Joe Biden. But whether Biden has been to the border is really completely irrelevant. And it also bears mentioning, I guess, that even just going to a location when you're a president doesn't necessarily really do much. I mean, remember when after the hurricanes in, I think it was 2017, when Donald Trump went to Puerto Rico. Oh, wow. He went. Wow. That's great. He shot rolls of paper towels like basketballs and appeared completely insensitive and arguably made things worse by just bringing his whole entourage and team and, you know, the entire apparatus that travels with the president to a place that was trying to recover, still didn't have power back on in many places, et cetera. So merely going is no big victory. And unfortunately, this counts as like valid journalism among many on the right. This is they see Peter Doocy ask his questions with his, you know, upspeak and bizarre delivery. And they say, wow, he really exposed this administration. No, he really didn't. And particularly in this situation, this is not a natural disaster where you go and tour damage and console victims. This is an immigration situation with complex legal circumstances. What would even be the point of Joe Biden going down there? Like, aside from whether in general a president needs to go somewhere in order to properly deal with the situation, in this particular case, it seems Joe Biden going down there would at minimum add nothing and at worst possibly even make the situation more complicated. So it's another failed gotcha. But sadly, in this country, given the lack of, you know, sort of awareness that so many people have about what are the important political questions and how do we figure out problems in society and in government, this is considered really powerful journalism. And that's probably why Fox News keeps Peter Doocy in the White House press briefing room. What do you think needs to happen on the border with this particular situation? Find me on Twitter at D Pacman and let me know. Let's get right into some interesting posts from the David Pacman Show subreddit. Remember that you can participate in the discussions at davidpacman.com/reddit. Nearly 35,000 of our viewers and listeners are subscribed free to the subreddit, davidpacman.com/reddit. A couple of interesting posts I spotted. William McAdoo posted this morning, yesterday, David was right about Tulsi Gabbard being a phony, and links to a piece done by our friends over at the Young Turks about Tulsi Gabbard defending drone usage to Tucker Carlson. You know, I have to admit, I completely forgot about Tulsi Gabbard. It's actually crazy how, you know, she was polling 1-3%. There was a movement that was very strongly behind her that wouldn't allow any criticism of Tulsi Gabbard and said she is really the progressive and all this different stuff. She clearly was not. She just disappeared, left Congress, etc. And then now all of a sudden she's back and she's criticizing Joe Biden and she's defending drones and she's doing all sorts of very strange things. My advice is just don't worry about Tulsi Gabbard. I couldn't find her less relevant, truly. And it's crazy. Oh, actually, someone even posted this to the subreddit. They said it's crazy because Biden is literally more progressive than she is. There's no question about it. There was nothing. The entire Tulsi thing was just a scam. And I'm glad that there are more people now understanding that they may have fallen for a scam. But it's a very good thing that Tulsi has basically disappeared, other than, I guess, appearing on Fox News and tweeting. Another post from user King Versingatorix. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, which says COVID has killed about as many Americans as the 1918 to 1919 flu, with the additional caveat that many people died from secondary bacterial infections during the 1918 flu pandemic, because that was the situation back then. And that when you account for that, in a sense, COVID itself has killed more. And yet we continue to see a large portion of this population in the United States that just doesn't want to take it seriously, even to this day. And, you know, at some point they're going to be bailed out. That's the crazy thing. Like, most people will survive, assuming COVID doesn't, mutate into something far more deadly, which is not expected to happen. Most people will survive. And no matter when it happens, they will say, "We told you so. We told you we never had to actually do anything." But yeah, the flu comparison numbers now becoming a relevant and much discussed topic. And then lastly, a critique of this deferral that's taking place to the Senate parliamentarian, with a post called "The Most Powerful Office in the Nation, the Parliamentarian, is Exerting Its Power Again," writing Senators Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin are beating the drums again that the almighty nameless overlord simply referred to as the parliamentarian is putting a stop to all the good things the lovable Democrats want to do. There's absolutely nothing they can do. It's like trying to beat Thanos with all the Infinity Stones. Okay, seriously, I can't believe they're trying this bold-faced lie again. It's very clearly just an excuse to renege on their promise. David Sirota posted on Twitter, "Not only can Chuck Schumer replace the parliamentarian, Kamala Harris can overrule a parliamentarian." Daily Poster was one of the only outlets to report this back during the $15 minimum wage fight, because apparently nobody is allowed to mention this fact. Yeah, I think the only way to say it is I'm pretty sick of the parliamentarian stuff. The parliamentarian can be overruled. The parliamentarian can be replaced. And the idea that this amount of power is being given to an unelected individual to set the agenda of what is even going to be discussed and voted on in the Senate, my preference would be, I know the right will say, "Oh, it's authoritarian. Look at these Democrats that are authoritarian." My preference would be overrule and replace as necessary. Get these things debated, get Republicans on the record actually opposing them on the merits, if that's what they want to do. And let's hold people accountable and actually try to push for some of this stuff. And of course, the cynical reaction would be, you know, this is Democrats finding a way to not have to have the debates about some of these things that will split the party. And there's probably validity to that. But I'm disgusted with the parliamentarian stuff. And I agree. Listen, on $15 minimum wage, I get the math of it, right? Even if you overrule the parliamentarian and you put $15 minimum wage in the COVID bill, it doesn't pass. I get that. And that's a specific situation. It's now just being used as an umbrella when you already may not have all Democrats supporting the agenda. So put this stuff in and let's actually get it to the floor and debate this stuff. That's my view. If you disagree with me, let me know. Join the discussion at davidpakman.com/Reddit. We now have video of former Breitbart propagandist and former Trump advisor Steve Bannon, who at one point was participating in meetings with the National Security Council. The backwards nature of how these absolutely horrible people, 50 to 60 years from now, when this era is studied, and people like Steve Bannon, Jared Kushner, and Stephen Miller are part of the discussion of history of the people that had influence at this point in time. Let's hope the future forgives us. Steve Bannon now has admitted that he helped plan the January 6th Trump rally that ultimately led to the Trump riots in order to kill the Biden presidency in the crib. That's the phrase he used. We're going to look at a clip momentarily. Trump White House chief strategist Steve Bannon has said he spoke with Trump ahead of his rally on 6 January, discussing how to, quote, kill the Biden presidency in the crib, shortly before a pro-Trump mob laid siege to the Capitol to stop the certification of President Joe Biden's election victory. During a broadcast on Real America's Voice, Mr. Bannon played a clip from MSNBC of Washington Post reporters Robert Costa and Robert Woodward speaking about the events that led up to the Capitol riot. Let's pick this up at exactly that point in the broadcast.
Who's he talking to that night? Steve Bannon on the phone. He's telling Steve Bannon over at the Willard Hotel, we need to kill the Biden presidency in the crib. That was the phrase based on our reporting in that conversation.
Yeah, because of his legitimacy. Let's look at the Economist poll. The Economist, not the War Room, not Revolver, the Economist. 42% of the American people, 42% of the American people think that Biden did not win the presidency legitimately. Mm-hmm. It killed itself. That's why this debt ceiling fight, the CR fight, so important. That's why getting and exposing to the world the Mogadishu situation in Del Rio, Texas, particularly for all the hardworking Hispanic, blue-collar Hispanics in this country, American citizens.
Let me talk about that briefly. That's actually, we could do a half hour just on that. The hardworking, working class, blue collar, Hispanic American citizens. There is so Steve Bannon is a horrible reactionary, but Steve Bannon is part of a slice of the right that recognizes, particularly in states like Texas, you're going to need to appeal to Hispanic voters if you want to continue winning those states. And in fact, Trump did okay with Hispanic voters. If you look at Florida, I know Cubans are particularly right wing Hispanic voters, but he did okay in Florida, actually. He won Florida thanks in part to a pretty strong level of support from Cuban American Floridians. Steve Bannon understands that. And that's why now you're starting to see people like Bannon placate and sort of pay lip service to working class American Hispanics who are American citizens. That is, it's dangerous in the sense that if they succeed, it will allow them to hold some of these states longer than all else being equal they otherwise might be able to. So we're going to come back to that. But that's now when you might be wondering why all of a sudden is Steve Bannon talking about, you know, appealing to Hispanic voters? It's because he is part of a slice that recognizes what's going on and that they need those voters in order to keep winning places like Florida, Texas, maybe even other states.
Just let this go with this illegitimate regime is doing. It killed itself. OK, but we told you from the very beginning, just expose it. Just expose it. Never back down. Never give up. And this thing will implode. And we'll save. And in doing so, we will save our country.
So not denying there that he was involved and talking to Trump about that. They had this plan. He is basically saying here the plan was justified. The plan was justified because a lot of Americans never believed or don't believe or still don't believe or were convinced that Joe Biden didn't actually win the election. The whole point here was to expose this and to expose it early and to expose it from day one. So that is Steve Bannon not denying that, saying, yeah, we were justified in organizing that rally, the rally which eventually led, of course, to the riots. And by the way, consider the double standard, right? There's the double standard of we absolutely had to plan that rally because Joe Biden either stole the election or was already setting us up for a disaster or whatever. And at the same time, the rioters were really Antifa. They weren't really Trumpists, but we planned the rally, but the rioters were fake and we were justified in one, but we had absolutely nothing to do with the other. Come on, guys. Come on. Last thing. Kill it in the crib is weird phraseology for a supposedly anti-abortion group of people. There's something a little bit odd about that phrase, but maybe we won't get into that right now. We'll have more coverage and clips from this very strange Steve Bannon show on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show on Instagram. It's great to have back on the program Lee McIntyre, who's a research fellow at the Center for Philosophy and History of Science at Boston University, also author of the book How to Talk to a Science Denier, Conversations with Flat Earthers, Climate Deniers, and Others Who Defy Reason. It's great to have you back on, Lee.
Thank you for having me back.
So when you started writing this book, it was before COVID, but we ended up with this incredible situation where we are now being held back, in fact, in our battle against this pandemic, in part because of exactly the type of science denial that you write about in the book. And you end up actually including COVID specifically in a chapter.
What happened was I got the contract to write the book just in mid-March 2020, just as COVID was lockdowns were happening. And of course, I'd planned the book, started the research for it even before that. And I told my editor I wanted to save the last chapter for COVID denial. And he said, well, you know, there is no COVID denial. Well, you know, wait. And so I watched COVID denial be born in real time, you know, after having studied science denial all these years and thinking about climate denial and anti-vax, and just watching it fulfill exactly the steps that the other science deniers had laid out, and it was all completely predictable.
So, I mean, where to even start with this? I guess the first thing would be, maybe let's start a little bit with the vaccine issue. You know, before COVID, you actually had some bipartisanship on vaccine conspiracy theories. You had groups of people on the left who were skeptical of vaccines because of their skepticism of big pharma. And you had people on the right who were skeptical of some vaccines because of their skepticism of anything that is government authorized of the FDA, et cetera. And there was a little bit of overlap, and you'd have these measles clusters in some places that are left wing and some places that are right wing. When it comes to COVID and the COVID vaccine, it seems to have dramatically shifted to what we would consider the political right. Is that perception true? And why is that?
You got it exactly right. Before COVID, anti-vax was more a bipartisan, or I should say nonpartisan, because, you know, you had liberals and conservatives. And yet, in some ways, what happened with COVID is that the anti-vax movement got taken over. Or let me put it this way. This was the kind of thing that the anti-vaxxers were prepared for. And it did get polarized, of course. You know, Trump and the Republican Party are part of why it got so polarized. And then it has ended up where it is. Some science denial is politically polarized. Climate change, COVID. Some of it is not. But that was one thing that we also saw, which was the anti-vax movement morph into the COVID vaccine movement. I'm sure there are still folks who are anti-vaxxers in general who are, you know, on the left.
Sure.
But you're correct that it has been taken over now by the right wing.
What line of argument is most effective, thinking not generally now, just in terms of getting people to re-examine anti-science beliefs, but just to get people vaccinated, what are the lines of argument that you believe would be most effective? Or is it really not about argument and it's just about requirements?
Well, you frame that just right. It's not about argument. But it can't just be about mandates and requirements either.
Okay.
I think there has to be something. I mean, mandates, I think, are part of it because this kind of denial is killing us. But I think one thing that I recommend in the book is that we make some efforts to actually begin to talk to one another. And it may seem that that's impossible because facts don't matter in this debate. You know, how much debate does there have to be? The problem is that this, like other forms of science denial, is not just about doubt. It's about distrust. Mm. And that wall of distrust has grown when we don't talk to one another. And so I think that the best possible thing we could do to get people to take the COVID vaccine is to reach out to the people who already love and trust us and talk to them. Those are sometimes the hardest conversations, but I think that we have to do it. We have to be respectful. We have to be calm. We have to be empathetic and actually listen to what people's concerns are. There's a hell of a lot of disinformation out there right now. And if it helps, think of COVID deniers or the vaccine hesitant, however you want to think of them, as victims. Mm. They're afraid. And they're all of this disinformation is surrounding them. They don't know what to do. So just to be somebody who listens, you know, to that family member or friend, ask them why they believe this, why they trust this source, not that. That can actually work wonders.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying makes perfect sense. And yet I'm imagining even some of the conversations I've had with viewers sometimes who say, well, listen, yeah. The new one is hundreds of thousands of people have died from the vaccine. OK, so that's one that on August 24th, right. A very popular Facebook video started spreading. And you say to some of these folks, OK, where did you get that idea? Well, I got it from this video. OK, well, what data is the video citing? And they'll say, just look at the submissions to the VAERS system, the V-A-E-R-S system. And then you say, well, but listen, have you visited the website? Anybody can submit anything. Nothing on that system is verified. There's a campaign to submit reports to that. And then they say, no, I believe that it's real. You've not proven that the reports are false. So then where do you go with that?
I think you went a good way down the road of where you go with that. When people insist on proof, I think it's important to point out that that's an unreasonable standard. You don't ask for that standard for, I mean, you could, but it's unreasonable to ask for it for anything else. They haven't proven that aspirin is safe, you know, 100% safe. I mean, that's just not how science works. Science is about building up evidence and warrant for your beliefs, but it's not deductive logic. It's not Euclidean geometry. You can't prove that that something is safe. And I think it's also important to point out to folks that just as you did about the VAERS system, that it's being gamed. They're thinking that these are good faith reports, you know, anecdotal reports. Some of those reports are coming in from trolls. They're coming in from folks who are trying to get other people to believe false things. And of course, this isn't going to convince anybody, but it's nonetheless important to know that the other day I read in a PolitiFact that the Poynter Institute, which is a fact-checking organization, had found that zero cases of people dying from the COVID vaccines. So there was not one credible case. Now, that doesn't mean that it couldn't happen. It doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. It just means that there is not evidence that it has happened. But, you know, compare that to the ridiculous numbers that are being proposed. You know, I've heard people say, you know, that there are 10,000 or more, 100,000 more. Where are the, why aren't the media reporting this then? Why are, you know, you only finding it in the VAERS system, or, you know, you're hearing a rumor from your cousin? These would be reported, but they're not. And it's because it's fake.
I mean, the problem with that, of course, is, and, you know, we've done a bunch of interviews on conspiracism and conspiratorial thinking. If they find evidence for their conspiracy theory, no matter how flaky, it becomes supportive of their conspiracy theory. If they find an absence of evidence, like the fact that there is not media reporting, it's part of the cover up and it becomes evidence of the conspiracy theory.
Right.
If there is, you know, contradictory evidence, then that evidence has been concocted and is not trustworthy.
That's right.
And I just don't know how we really deal with that on a wholesale basis. Your ideas make perfect sense. Empathy, listening, one-on-one. It feels very sort of retail. And I don't know that it deals with the wholesale problem of the millions that fall for this stuff.
You bring up a good point here. There are, once you're talking to people who have fallen for it, it's in some sense too late.
Oh, it is. Okay.
It's already spread, right?
Right.
So, I mean, we should be talking more about who's behind the disinformation campaign and how the disinformation gets amplified.
Mm.
And I can say a little bit more about that if you want to.
Yeah, please.
But I mean, but once that's out there in the world, then, you know, you do have to talk to the deniers. And let's start with that. It's generally a good idea not to get into a factual debate with them because their position is not really based on facts in the first place. And
right.
Jonathan Swift said you can't reason somebody out of something they didn't reason themselves into in the first place. But notice a couple of the things that you've mentioned. They have to do with logic. They have to do with evidence. They have to do with the way that people are reasoning on the basis of evidence. And so to point out, you know, to a conspiracy theorist, well, what could convince you that this conspiracy theory is wrong then?
Right.
Because if there's evidence for it, you accept it. If there's no evidence, you think that that counts for it too. I mean, how do you know that this is the case? You know, so, you know, talking, and there's in fact good empirical evidence now. There was a study in Nature Human Behavior in 2019, which showed that something called technique rebuttal can work against science deniers. All science deniers engage in the same form of toxic reasoning. They cherry pick facts, they rely on conspiracy theories, they engage in illogical reasoning, they rely on fake experts, and they think science has to be perfect. And once you know that blueprint, you can call them out on it in a respectful way. But you know, you don't have to get into a factual debate, you know, where what often happens with me is somebody will send me an email and say, well, you know, here are 20 things that you need to read immediately. You know, and I'm not going to get into that debate with them, because, you know, why are they trying to convince me? If they have the evidence, they should be trying to, you know, convince the CDC or the other scientists. Now, they'd say that's part of a conspiracy. What I always do is I punt to the idea of, well, let's talk about your reasoning. Let's talk about how you've come to the conclusions you've come to. Why do you trust this person? You know, why do you trust this video that you saw, et cetera, et cetera? And the interesting part here is, to a group of conspiracy theorists, raising the issue of trust, that might work for you.
Right. And the other thing that sometimes, I mean, this is when you get a couple of these conspiracy theorists together, oftentimes their justification, they might end up with the same belief, but with very different justifications. Yes. And getting them to realize that they don't even agree with each other about right. what even is the proof. Like, flat earth is a classic one,
yes.
where the explanations right. for why people come to believe it are often conflict with each other. And it can get right. pretty interesting when you actually get them saying, well, here's how I came to the conclusion versus how you did. And they conflict yeah. very much.
And yet they all ultimately agree with one another on the conclusion. And
right.
because of what they have in common, which is distrust.
Mm.
They have distrust of scientists, distrust of the media, distrust of government. And so here's the thing that I found in this research that I've been doing. If it were just about doubt, then evidence would help, because you can overcome doubt with evidence. Scientists do it all the time. But distrust cannot be overcome with evidence alone. Distrust has to be managed by having the person grow to trust you. And how do you do that? You do that through trying to build a personal relationship with them, through engagement.
Right.
Now, that is a very frustrating, uncomfortable, and difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
And most people would rather walk away than do that. The reason I wrote the book is to make it clear to people that if you do that, you're being a denier, because there is scientific evidence which shows that everyday ordinary citizens like you and me can go out and talk to science deniers, use technique rebuttal, and maybe change their minds. So why aren't we doing more of that? Now, that's not sufficient. You know, there's the problem of the creation of disinformation and its amplification. We've got to do something about both of those things. But what can we do every day, just right where we sit? We can talk to people who disagree with us. Engage your cousin, engage your uncle at Thanksgiving, talk to them about why, you know, what are your reasons for not getting the COVID vaccine? We can ask them, we can have a conversation about that.
One of the last things I wanted to talk about, there seems to be this meta problem where, particularly in the Trump era, there is now not even, I don't know if agreement is the right term, but there is a lack of understanding as to what counts as an empirical claim and what is just an opinion. And
yes.
we are very frequently seeing, for example, when people are presented with just the empirical reality of, for example, whether it was really Trumpists who did the Trump riots. And they come back and say, listen, that's fine. You can believe that. My belief is that it was Antifa.
Yeah.
And they think that what these issues are issues of opinion, when they're really just issues of fact. Is that yes. a broader educational problem, or where does that stem from?
The problem, this is why we need to take science denial seriously, because it's not only about COVID and about climate change, but it has metastasized now to reality denial, what I call post-truth, that stop the steal, the idea that the January 6th was Antifa. This is a denialist campaign. It's a classic denialist campaign that follows the same five tropes of reasoning about conspiracy theories, et cetera, that I gave you before.
Right.
So that's why we have to get ahead of this. Now, you ask exactly the right question. Where does this come from? And the answer is it comes from the folks who are creating the disinformation. We've got to stop thinking of science denial as an accident or a mistake. It's a lie. Someone is intentionally creating disinformation, not misinformation, but disinformation. Now, to ask who? Quite a bit of it is from foreign intelligence services, for instance, in Russia. People may not believe that, but it is out there. I didn't break into CIA headquarters to get that information. It was out there in major media in about March or April. It was about a 1 or 2 day story. But there was a terrific article in the New York Times about a year and a half ago called Putin's Long War Against American Science. There are Russian troll farms that manufacture disinformation about health issues, about GMOs, about COVID, about anti-vax, because they want to undermine the United States. They want us to be at one another's throats fighting about what we're fighting about. They've done a great job of it.
Right.
Here's the interesting next step, though. Though that disinformation is then picked up and amplified on social media, and it doesn't take that many people to do it. There was a story in NPR the other day that the 65% of the anti-vax propaganda on Twitter was due to 12 people.
Right.
I mean, so this is why we've got to realize we're in an information war. And as a country, and in an information war, you have to figure out who's spreading the propaganda and how it's being propagated. So I think that in the Wall Street Journal series this week, I think makes a pretty good case that Facebook is not doing a very good job self-regulating. They know how polarizing their platform is. They understand that they're helping the spread of disinformation. They're not doing much about it.
The book is, of course, How to Talk to a Science Denier, Conversations with Flat Earthers, Climate Deniers, and Others Who Defy Reason. We've been speaking with the book's author, Lee McIntyre. Lee, always great having you on. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me back.
I'm going to give you guys a tour of the last 24 hours of Republicans on the floor of the House and the floor of the Senate, okay? When I've been reminding people that the right has abandoned policy, that this new sort of breed of Trumpist doesn't even pretend to be about anything other than PR and tweeting and memes, I didn't literally expect that there would be a day where they just hold up printouts of memes on the floor of the House and even on the floor of the Senate. But that day came yesterday. And we're going to look at some examples here, and we're going to talk about the real underlying problem here, because this is really a societal problem. If this stuff didn't work to get people elected, if it was laughable, wait, hold on. You just do tweets and memes. Obviously, we're not voting for you. If that was the case, then this stuff wouldn't exist because they never would have made it to the floor of the House. What am I talking about? Well, let's just start with Marjorie Taylor Greene. Marjorie Taylor Greene spent the day yesterday on the floor of the House with oversized printouts of different memes and talking about how the memes are real. And this is completely beyond parody. So here's the first one. This is a meme where there is a I'm describing memes for the audio audience. This one is a two frame meme that says, let's see who this really is. And it's a prisoner with a blindfold that says Green New Deal on it. And then when they remove the blindfold, I guess that's the hammer and sickle of communist China. I need to check Know Your Meme, I guess. Here's Marjorie Taylor Greene.
This is a simple meme that you would find on the internet, but this meme is very real. The Green New Deal surprise is serves China and China only. You can go ahead and put number one up. So today, talking about the Green New Deal and the all-out war on the men.
Okay. They're doing... You know, I would respect a sort of like PowerPoint presentation if it was substantive. Like when senators and members of Congress pull out charts and graphs of different data and they understand it and they understand how these different economic elements relate to all other, that's fine. They're putting up pictures. It's like this is the House equivalent of Trump's daily presidential daily briefing. Instead of being many pages, they cut it down to a couple pages and he still wouldn't read it. So they cut it down to one page and then they cut it down to a page, half of which was like a chart and then two or three bullet points. This is the floor of the House version of that. Marjorie Taylor Greene continued then. Here is the next meme. Here is one which says, I own Joe Biden and now I own Afghanistan's lithium deposits. And the idea is that it's China loving the fact that Biden got out of Afghanistan. I guess Marjorie Taylor Greene wanted to stay there, even though Trump wanted to leave, and she's a Trumpist, because it's all incoherent.
I find it pretty shocking that people actually think that members of Congress and their legislation is actually going to control the Earth's temperature.
So this is now going on about climate change. And again, it's just Marjorie Taylor Greene on the floor of the House with memes. Here's a bonus meme from the Senate. This was also yesterday. This is Senator Joni Ernst, also kind of the same vein, slightly less cartoonish than Marjorie Taylor Greene, but almost as ignorant. She also puts up a meme and she says this is a popular meme. I've actually never seen this one. This one seems to be, they're almost like, are those Go Fish cards or Uno cards that say trillion and 1.9 trillion for the stimulus bill, 1.2 trillion? I guess it's about making fun of Democratic spending or something. And then she puts up another one that it's just all, it's all pathetic.
Mario reminds me of this popular meme of a guy playing Uno.
Okay, it was Uno, and it's just about Democratic spending. Guys, it's not an exaggeration. Republicans in the House and Senate yesterday, their arguments and their presentations are they put up printouts of memes and they say, see, guys, this is what Democrats are doing. These are their critiques. This is the bigger issue of the memification of the Republican Party. We've talked about increasingly absent of policy. They are literally showing memes. It proves that point. Now, just a couple other examples just of the low level of discourse. These aren't memes, but this is just the idiocy that we've come to see on a regular basis. Here's Congressman Mike Lee. He is taking issue with the fact that when the CDC counts causes of death, they don't include abortion as a cause of death. Why would that be? Well, because abortion is not considered death, like dying from COVID. That's why. Okay, here's Mike Lee.
States, and I just want to go over this because I think sometimes we become disillusioned with what is actually happening.
Oh, yeah.
The National Center for Health Statistics of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports on the leading causes of death in the United States, but does not include abortion among their list of causes of death.
Right. That's his gripe. So this is, again, another one of these issues of why are we even talking about this? And people watch it and think this is valid political discourse. And when we've talked about the sequelae of Trumpism, whether Trump goes away, comes back or doesn't, one of the things we have to contend with, and we're seeing it, I mean, these are examples of it, are that the coarsening of discourse under Donald Trump has made it so that these types of presentations on the floors of the House and Senate, memes and why it doesn't abortion count as a cause of death, all of this stuff, it's considered valid politicking for many Republicans, even though you and I hopefully see it for what it is, which is just meaningless garbage. Just one more example here. Here's Trumpian Congresswoman Lauren Boebert. She's making the point that victims of rape need access to guns, not access to abortions. Okay.
Lie number two, rape victims need abortions. Wrong. They need love. They need support. They need safety and healing. They needed a Glock 19 when it happened.
Right. And this, of course, the context is the situation with the extremely restrictive abortion law passed in Texas and the debate that's been generated over that. How do we recover from this? And what I mean by that is, how do you turn around after 5 years of the political discourse being your fake news? Where's my African American? What about injecting hitting the body with light and heat? And all of these different Pocahontas and all of this stuff. It's now just the Republican Party. That's what it is. And one of the things would be if both sides were having substantive adult discussions about important issues, and then we focus on the substance. We don't even have that because the right is holding up memes on the floor of the House of Representatives and the Senate and talking about abortion should be listed as a cause of death. And this type of thing, I don't know how we turn it around. And hopefully to some degree, our conversation with Lee McIntyre was informative in terms of how to decultify. But this is going to be a real, real big uphill battle. Want to just not spend a lot of time on this, but I do want to show you one other clip. A bunch of people wrote in asking me to talk about this one. A former Trump National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, suggests that there is going to be sort of like secret vaccination done of people by putting the vaccine in salad dressing. He said he heard that. Our friend John Amato over at Crooks and Liars wrote this up. Michael Flynn is insane, says vaccine is in salad dressing. Michael Flynn's latest crazy, deep state spiking your salad dressing with COVID vaccine. This was on, I don't even know what show this was on. It looks to be some kind of like bogus medical and financial consultation type show. The ads on the screen say something about protect your health with help from Sherwood.tv and me and MD, Vladimir Zelenko, MD. Protect your wealth with help from Andrew Zorkini. I don't even know where these where do they even find these shows? I don't know. But here is Michael Flynn talking about, I guess, some kind of deep state putting vaccines in salad dressing. Does drinking the vaccine even do the same thing as injecting it? It all sounds very stupid, but here's Michael Flynn. And you'll notice, so remember, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, this was the top national security official in the country for a short period of time. He's also wearing a shirt that has his own name on it. It says Flynn. It's weird.
I got to put, you know, somebody sent me a thing this morning where they're talking about putting the vaccine into salad dressing or salads. Have you seen this?
Yes.
Have you seen this? I mean, it's, and I'm thinking to myself, this is the bizarro world, right? This is definitely the bizarro world. So there's the seriousness of what this professional realized he was doing wrong. And he's now, you know, he's found a new way. And then there's the laughability on the other extreme that these people are seriously thinking about how to impose their will on us. In our society, and it's take away your freedom of choice. Stop.
Yeah. So there is no plan to put the vaccine into salad dressing, but also I don't know that this is really even relevant, but the people we would need to trick into taking the vaccine are probably more likely to have it in a hot dog than in a salad. If you understand what I'm saying, so like if this was your approach, I'd be looking at maybe injecting the vaccine into a Frankfurter rather than mixing it into salad dressing. Just my take. I think the folks are more likely to reach for the dog than the salad, but that's probably a different issue. There is no such plan, of course, and it's completely absurd. And who even watches these shows? Like, there's a lot of these shows that are either religiously oriented financial advice or religiously oriented medical advice or just quackery. And they seem to get donations. I don't know who is watching and who would be watching in a serious way. Like, we monitor these shows in a sort of satirical sense and like the horror of it. But somebody must be contributing to this stuff. And also, if they get Michael Flynn on, maybe we can get Michael Flynn on, right? I mean, these shows don't seem to have much of an audience. Maybe Michael Flynn would be willing to appear with me. I would be glad to speak to him. I think that would be absolutely great. We have a voicemail number that you can call any time of day. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here's a caller wondering about whether I'll be dipping my toes further into financial YouTube. Take a listen to this.
I noticed.
Whoop, hold on a second. Let's play it from the beginning, please.
Having me, Kevin, on your show. Hey, David, huge fan of the show. I noticed that you've been having me, Kevin, on your show couple times recently, and I've actually gotten some of my financial friends to get into your show because of me, Kevin, being on your show. So I was wondering if you were going to possibly have, like, Graham Stephan or anyone else in the quote-unquote financial YouTube community. Thank you.
I would be glad to interview Graham Stephan. I think he's doing interesting stuff on YouTube, as many of you know. My formal training is really in finance. And, you know, my master's degree, my MBA, my concentration was financial planning. It's an area of personal interest. I always hesitate to give advice, and I try to make clear whenever we talk about personal finance, I'm not giving advice on the show. But if there were to be, like, imagine that there was no more political David Pakman show, or that I started a second project, it would almost certainly be in the finance space. So yeah, I would be very interested in speaking with Graham Stephan or being on with him and talking about the sort of overlap between personal finance and politics. And there really is a lot there. Not sure if people in my audience would be interested, but maybe there's a new audience to be found there. All right. On today's bonus show, Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party are saying we can't play games. We can't play games with the country's economic situation or finances or the debt ceiling or whatever. Meanwhile, they are playing games with the debt ceiling. So we're going to talk about that incredible hypocrisy. Even though we're talking mostly about Beto O'Rourke running against Greg Abbott in Texas, Matthew McConaughey, according to polling, might be a viable candidate, the actor Matthew McConaughey. We will talk about, is Beto the right choice? And then we will also talk about McDonald's phasing out those plastic toys from Happy Meals because they want to be more green. When was the last time I was at McDonald's? I will reveal it on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com and get instant access to the members.
This is Ian McCulloch, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
This is Danny Glover, and you're listening to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey, this is Jim from Rusted Root, and you're listening to WRCT 88.3 in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Hi, you're listening to
WRCT
Pittsburgh. CMU. This is Sue Garner.
And Rick Brown.
Have some barbecue sauce.
You're listening to WRCT Feedback Radio.
Hello, this is Adam Clayton here, the bass player from U2. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Mary.
From Hi
Places.
And you're listening to WRCT
88.3 FM.
FM.
A radio.
Senator John McCain, and I'm from Arizona. But when I'm in Pittsburgh, I always listen to WRCT, one of the finest stations in all of radio, and Carnegie Mellon University is one of the finest academic institutions in our country. Be sure at your next election to vote early and vote often.
WRCT Radio 900.
WRCT Pittsburgh, we won't respect you anymore.
This is WRCT. This is WRCT. Come on and stay with us a while. Big 900 on your dial. We'll make your day a great big smile. WRCT.
WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM, rocks.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best.
Collins from Late Show with David Letterman, and you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What the hell are we doing here? What we witness takes us back hundreds of years. What we witness was worse than what we witnessed in slavery. Cowboys with their reins again whipping black people, Haitians, into the water where they're scrambling and falling down when all they're trying to do is escape from violence in their country.
The U.S. Special Envoy to Haiti resigns in protest over the Biden administration's mass deportation of Haitian asylum seekers days after U.S. Border Patrol agents on horseback were filmed chasing, grabbing, and whipping refugees at the border. We'll speak with Congressmember Maxine Waters, longtime advocate of the people of Haiti. But first, as the Delta variant continues to surge across the United States, so too has the housing and eviction crisis, with more than 11 million households now behind on rent. Most of those evicted, Black and Latinx. The majority are single women with children.
I've been forced to choose between food, rent, too many times. Many of us had to make the choice of the choices between our health or our homes. The rent eats first.
That ain't right.
We'll speak with a single mother and with a high school student who faced eviction and went to Washington, D.C. to help Congressmember Cori Bush and Senator Elizabeth Warren introduce the Keeping Renters Safe Act to reinstate the federal pandemic eviction moratorium. Then the Taliban are already restricting women's rights just a month since they took over Afghanistan. We'll speak with V, formerly known as Eve Ensler, founder of 1 Billion Rising, which has organized mass actions for Saturday to roar and rage for the women in Afghanistan. And we'll hear from a recent member of Afghan parliament who's now in an undisclosed location.
Indisputably, we believe where there is oppression, there is resistance that will begin and grow against it. The resistance has been initiated by women. Fortunately, this time, women took the lead.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. Special Envoy to Haiti has resigned in protest over the Biden administration's policies. In a letter, the longtime diplomat Daniel Foote wrote, quote, "I will not be associated with the United States' inhumane, counterproductive decision to deport thousands of Haitian refugees." Foote also criticized the Biden administration for meddling in Haiti's political affairs, including its support for Ariel Henry as Haiti's prime minister following the assassination of Haitian President Jovenel Moïse in July. Foote wrote, quote, "The cycle of international political interventions in Haiti has consistently produced catastrophic results." Foote's resignation came just days after U.S. Border Patrol agents on horseback were filmed chasing, grabbing, and whipping Haitian asylum seekers who'd gathered in a makeshift camp in Del Rio, Texas. On Thursday, the Department of Homeland Security banned the use of horses in the area, but deportations continued despite